And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please have that pencil and recycled paper handy so you can take down all this wonderful information. As we start off the second half of our show with our commentary. This week's commentary is entitled A New Campaign Targets Biotech Trees, written by Danielle Knight of the Interpress Service. Following the outcries against genetically engineered crops, environmental groups are beginning to take aim at plans underway to alter the genes of trees grown for pulp and paper products. While forest-related biotech research is still in its infancy compared to that which is taking place in agriculture, field trials of genetically modified trees have proliferated around the world in the second half of the 1990s. Now environmentalists are starting to pay attention to research links made between large biotech companies and the paper and pulp industry to develop faster-growing trees that could be designed to work together with herbicides. Ecologists worry that the drive for profit is causing these companies to overlook the overall impact genetically modified trees could have on the complex workings of forest ecosystems. The economic incentive for these companies to produce trees more quickly cannot be overemphasized, say groups which estimate the value of the world's total annual timber harvest is in excess of $400 billion. That's with a B. Environmentalists fear, for example, that new genetically modified traits such as herbicide resistance could possibly spread to other trees through cross-fertilization. This could cause certain trees to overtake ecosystems and cause other native species to go extinct. We feel that this is a very dangerous trend in the industrial forestry and a real threat to biodiversity, forest ecosystems, and the planet, says Patrick Rainsborough, outreach coordinator for the California-based Rainforest Action Network. Last April, Monsanto Corporation, expected to merge with Pharmacia Upjohn, hooked up with international paper Westvaco Corporation, which are both based in New York, and the New Zealand-based Fletcher Challen Forest to form a forestry biotechnology joint venture. The four companies will contribute $60 million over 5 years to produce and market tree seedlings that they say will improve forest health and productivity. Researchers will focus on altering the genetic traits of tree species commonly planted by the forest industry worldwide, such as eucalyptus, poplar, radiata pine, loblolly pine, and sweet gum trees, say the companies. Besides increasing the growth rates of a tree, they plan to also focus on making these trees tolerant to certain herbicides, such as, you guessed it, Monsanto's Roundup. And these are much like Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybeans, which are genetically designed to survive sprayings of an herbicide it manufactures. I can't pronounce it. They say they will also aim to improve the fiber quality and uniformity to increase efficiency in paper and wood products manufacturing processes. Increasing the productivity of tree plantations safely and sustainably will meet the world's wood and fiber needs without increasing pressure on native forests, says a statement released by Westvaco. And if you believe that. But environmental groups say that just like biologically modified corn and soybeans, not all the possible impacts of genetically altering trees have been adequately studied or tested. The use of genetically engineered crops intensifies the many concerns about the use of genetically engineered crops, says Rebecca Goldberg, a senior scientist with Environmental Defense, a Western Washington-based group critical of the technology. Since trees grown uniformly on plantations for paper and pulp are often nearby natural native forests, environmentalists fear that cross-pollination will be very likely occurring. Goldberg says that pollen from trees are known to travel great distances by the wind. Buffer zones of 50 or so meters intended to shield traditional crops and native trees from genetically modified pollen, as advocated by biotech companies, are inadequate given that pollen from some pine trees has been known to travel hundreds of kilometers. One of the proposed gene-altering strategies to increase tree ring and tree growth rates involves shutting off the tree's ability to reproduce so that all the organism's energy goes towards development instead of fertility. If traits affecting reproduction escape to wild trees, whole species could be jeopardized, warned the groups. The risks of genetic pollution in our remaining native forests are irreversible and potentially one of the greatest threats to biodiversity ever, says Mick Petrie, a campaigner with the Native Forest Network, an advocacy group based in the state of Vermont. According to NFN, companies can now alter trees to substantially reduce lignin, a component of the cell walls in trees and other plants that is essential for the structure of the plant, by adding strength and vascular functions. Pulp and paper companies must remove the lignin from wood pulp to make paper, but now researchers have devised a way to genetically disrupt a tree's production of lignin. The actual processes that form lignin are poorly understood, and how diminished production of essential enzymes may affect other function is unknown, says Native Forest Network in a recent newsletter. Because lignin is essential to a tree's strength, lowering lignin could adversely affect a tree's ability to withstand wind without damage, says the group. Escape of low lignin trees into the wild is a significant worry and could have devastating consequences on native forests, they say. The altering of lignin production underlies that more research is required to fill gaps in the understanding of tree biology and ecology, say the environmentalists. Trees are very complex organisms. Recent studies, for example, reveal that some trees, when attacked by caterpillars, release a chemical warning to surrounding trees, which alter their chemical structure in the leaves to be unappealing to the caterpillars. How will altering gene codes affect these and other little-understood behaviors, asked the Native Forest Network. The World Wildlife Fund says that trees, unlike crops, can take up to hundreds of years to fully mature and are therefore subject to a much wider range of environmental stresses, and those stresses can in turn affect the behavior of the modified genome. At present, nobody can confidently quantify the environmental risks surrounding genetically modified trees, the group says in a report on genetically modified trees published last year. Given all the unknowns, the World Wildlife Fund is urging governments to declare a moratorium on the commercial release of genetically modified trees and is encouraging the industrial forest sector to do the same voluntarily. While calling for government regulators of biotechnology to better consult with environmental organizations, the World Wildlife Fund is also prodding the paper and biotechnology industries to redesign field trials to examine broader environmental impacts. Any decision as to whether biotechnology has a role in commercial forestry should only be made once the risks involved are properly identified and quantified, says the World Wildlife Fund. And once again, our commentary, New Campaign Targets Biotech Trees, was written by Danielle Knight of the InterPress Service. And let's get into more environmental activist news here. This is a report from Redwood Mary. Yesterday I hiked with Mendocino Redwood Company, who's chief forester, another forester, and a Big Cheese PR person, and they looked at a proposed THP in the Greenwood Elk watershed, and on top of it had to file public comments on that THP before I went into the forest with them. Sneaky Pete's they are, for MRC rescheduled the THP visit to the last week till yesterday, from last week until yesterday. While I was accommodating but unwittingly agreed to go with them, the last day of public comments deadline, which meant we would still be in the forest while the deadline time passed, I caught them with it and said to them the day before we were to go out, it was only fair that they request that CDF extend a comment period for a few days. CDF is the California Department of Forestry, and the Mendocino Redwood Company is MRC. MRC has the power to do that, and they have in the past. And since I was accommodating with their requested change of schedule, fair is fair, there was a lot of strong resistance from the head forester, who got a little snippy at times with me for asking questions when we were out in the forest, and he said no. So I had to get up super early yesterday and write up my public comments. Thank goodness I had reviewed the 30-plus page plan while I was traveling back east and made notes. Still, these things take at least a day to write, and I had to kick mine out in 3 hours before I left to meet with MRC in the field. So I am bone tired. I took out Zamara from Global Exchange with me. That created a stir with MRC. After I left the group, once we came off the logging plan, I drove up Signal Ridge Road in the opposite direction to see what was up there. It is a former logging roads with land sold off as parcels to private owners. These are residential small ranches. I am convinced that the road that Mendocino Redwood Company is putting in is not just to get the few trees out for all that expense and effort, not to mention ripping out a regenerating area. I am convinced the road is for further access into the forest area on that steep slope and ridgetop for future access to THPs yet to be proposed, and to eventually subdivide the land similar to what was done on nearby Signal Ridge Road by the former timber company owners. The water up there is used to support homesteads. This is exactly what happened in Santa Cruz, California. I ask folks to note that one of the chief foresters, Mike Janai, and also John, I don't know his last name, who took us out yesterday, are both from Santa Cruz. All three must be getting paid big salaries to have relocated to here, and are the three who usually do the dog and pony shows to take folks like us out. How irritated they became when I asked them legitimate questions. Again, the loss of species, et cetera, is something they shine on. They like to talk about their plans and how good they are and the wonderful experiments they have, and when you come up with critical and logical questions, they get mad. This plan has low basal area to begin with and seems ridiculous to go through all the effort for the very little timber they're going to take out while ripping up nicely regenerated vegetation on the very steep slopes. Some of the conifers are thick as 3 feet in diameter on a road that has not been used in 30 years. And the road crosses 5 times over Class 3 water courses and runs along second-class water courses. I think they're really nuts to go for this plan unless their future plans call for another agenda. I've also been getting from Mendocino Redwood Company that nesting owls have been moving to new nesting areas and are mucking up their THPs. Now, this is interesting. MRC did not take their letter, did not get their take letter from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife until Monday. The take letter is authorization to take habitat for nesting owls, apparently. Anyway, report from Redwood Mary. And here's another activist report. 2 members of the Escalante Wilderness Project were arrested last weekend at the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument Visitor Center in Escalante, Utah. The Escalante Wilderness Project had been given a permit last year to distribute literature in the parking lot, but BLM insisted that they be in an area 100 feet away from the visitor center. When no one bothered to stop by their table, they moved a little closer to the entrance to the visitor's center. On Sunday, they were asked to move their table back, and when they refused, Patrick Deal was arrested on charges of failure to disperse. On Monday, Juniper Allison was also arrested when she refused to move the table. They were distributing literature concerning the grazing impacts in the monument, something the Bureau of Land Management has not acted aggressively against in the view of many. And their literature was confiscated. By all accounts, they were not impeding access to the center, nor were they demonstrating in any way. They were both taken to jail in Hurricane, a town on the west side of Zion National Park, about 165 miles away, and they were both released on Tuesday. On Friday, the state director of the Bureau of Land Management, Sally Wisely, held a meeting in Salt Lake City with the Escalante Wilderness Project folks. Kate Cannon, the monument manager, and the American Civil Liberties Union, the parties agreed that the EWP could continue to set up their table closer to the visitor center, although they would have to make room for other groups wanting to set up information tables there also. The BLM returned their confiscated informational materials, but there was no decision on whether to drop the charges. You want more information on the Escalante Wilderness Project? Well, they're at www.escalantehouse.org. That's www.escalantehouse.org. Looking for some good books to read this summer? Well, here's some activist reading that was forwarded to Uncle Dennis. Check for the first one in a used bookstore or at your library, or interlibrary if it's not in your local library holdings. This book will change your life if you choose to integrate its powerful message. It's called Anatomy of the Spirit, The 7 Stages of Power and Healing. It's written by Carolyn Miss, M-Y-S-S, or Mice, maybe. M-Y-S-S. Anatomy of the Spirit, The 7 Stages of Power and Healing by Carolyn Mice, published by Three Rivers Press, Crown Publishers in 1996. ISBN number is 0-609-80014-0. And the second book is awesome, it says in large type. It is brand new, a gem that has not yet filtered down to the front lines grassroots movement yet, but I hope it does, and it may. It's called Spirit Matters by Michael Lerner, published by Walsh Books. If you'd like to order a copy of this, Spirit Matters by Michael Lerner, L-E-R-N-E-R, Walsh Books' phone number is 800-766-8009. That's 800-766-8009 to find out if there's a copy available in your bookstore locally or to order a copy. David Corton, author of When Corporations Rule the World, says, Spirit Matters is an essential spiritual guide for the progressive activist. And Matthew Fox says, this book challenges and delights, moves and inspires, shakes and disturbs. And, of course, the final selection in the Earth First Radio Book Club of the Air is Truth or Dare by Starhawk, our wonderful Northern California witch. Truth or Dare by Starhawk, stories of survival in jail, traces the imprisonment by patriarchy's attitudes of both men and women's highest potential, and parallels this to how nature also gets destroyed, packed with powerful insights on how to organize and integrate powerful group support and consensus techniques. Truth or Dare by Starhawk. Look for that one. All right. National Forest Protection Groups impact California logging. Unprecedented number of timber sales were stopped in recent past. From Nevada City, California, an unprecedented number of timber sales on Forest Service lands in California were stopped in the past few months by two national conservation groups. The groups, the Forest Conservation Council and the National Forest Protection Alliance, assisted the California activist Scott Schroeder, opposed commercial exploitation extraction activities on public lands. Federal timber sale decisions have been overturned by the group's appeals on the Lassen, El Dorado, and Stanislaw National Forests, and include the Rimbo, Traverse Creek, and Shimkey projects. The winning appeals have pointed out serious weaknesses and deficiencies in the government's analysis of environmental impacts, particularly on those endangered California wildlife. The regional office of the Forest Service in Vallejo, California, has acknowledged these assertions. The national group's appeals have argued that the Forest Service documentation did not contain any of the necessary analysis of effects on the California spotted owl, the Pacific fisher, or other imperiled species, that logging does not reduce the risk of wildfire, and that non-commercial restoration projects are more efficient economically and ecologically. Logging has been shown to be a number one cause of increased wildfires in the Sierra Nevada. Timber sales such as these have little, if any, effects on reducing fire risk while destroying wildlife habitat, water quality, and recreational opportunities for many years to come. We are simply asking the Forest Service to consider alternatives other than logging, said Forest Conservation Council Executive Director Brian Bird. And if you'd like more information, you can contact Brian Vincent of American Lands. His number, 530-265-3506. That's 530-265-3506. And in a bit of bad news from Russia, in a move to restructure the federal government's executive branch, President Vladimir Putin has eliminated the State Committee for Environmental Protection along with several other committees. They were the state committees for forestry, northern regions, land policy, cinematography, and youth policy. The Committee for Environmental Protection was the main government body responsible for monitoring and analyzing all environmental sectors except those related to nuclear issues. The decree was made public a while ago, actually, about 3 weeks ago, and triggered immediate criticism from leading environmentalists. The environmental and forestry functions were transferred to, of course, the Ministry of Natural Resources. And with licenses, development of Russia's oil, natural gas, and other mineral deposits, indicating he will be subordinating environmental concerns to the development of natural resources, President Putin completed his new cabinet by appointing as energy minister a relative unknown, Alexander Gavrin, who had close ties to the country's largest oil producer, Lukoil. Oh, man. Vladimir Slivyak, coordinator of nuclear programs for the Moscow-based organization EcoDefense, called the move a step towards de-environmentalization of the state. But working on environmental issues is not an easy task in Russia. President Putin was director of the Russian Security Police, or FSB, from 1998-1999. He is known to share their belief that environmentalists may be working against the best interests of Russia. Many Russian groups and individuals are accused of espionage for their work against radioactive contamination and nuclear safety. In arresting environmentalists and others, the Russian police have made wide use of the practice of planting drugs on them, human rights activists have said. And we have a couple more minutes here, so let's get into some animal news. The National Marine Fisheries Service has issued a proposed rule to list the white abalone, Haliotsis sorenseni, as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. The proposal comes in response to a formal administrative petition from the Center for Biological Diversity requesting the agency take action to protect the species under the Environmental Protection Act. Quote, the white abalone is a classic example of how a mismanaged fishery has brought a formerly abundant species to the brink of extinction, said Brendan Cummings of the Center for Biological Diversity. The white abalone will be the first marine invertebrate protected under the Endangered Species Act, and fortunately it will not be the last. Numerous other marine species are now facing extinction due to the abuse of our oceans. The law requires the National Marine Fisheries Service to make a final decision by May 5th of next year. The white abalone is a marine snail that lives from Point Conception, California, to Punta Abreojos in Baja California, Mexico. One of the eight abalone species along the California coast, the white abalone once numbered between 2 and 4 million but have been depleted by commercial fishing. The most recent surveys estimate that fewer than 2,500 remain. That's a decline of over 99%. White abalone are broadcast spawners, requiring males and females to be within a few meters of each other for successful fertilization and reproduction to occur. The few abalone that escaped commercial harvest are too few and too far apart to successfully reproduce. The lifespan of an individual white abalone is estimated to be between 35 and 40 years. Scientists have predicted the species will be extinct in less than a decade unless immediate action is taken. Oh boy. Several conservation groups and a former native subsistence hunter filed a complaint in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia to force the government to protect the vulnerable Cook Inlet beluga whale population. This complaint follows a petition filed a year ago that asked for the population, currently numbered 350 animals or less, to be listed as endangered. Named as defendants in the case are Commerce Secretary William Daley and the National Marine Fisheries Service. The suit alleges they violated the Endangered Species Act by not acting in a timely manner. The National Marine Fisheries Service had a year to decide what is adequate protection for this vulnerable population, said Chris Ballet, director of the Center for Marine Conservation's Alaska office. The Cook Inlet population of beluga whales is genetically distinct from other populations of belugas in Alaska. Since 1990, the population may have dropped nearly 65% when the National Marine Fisheries Service estimated the inlet supported about 1,000 whales. Even if hunting was limited to only one or two whales, the National Marine Fisheries Service believes it could take several decades or more for the population to recover. The Cook Inlet is the most developed region of Alaska. Hunting, potential oil spills, marine transportation, commercial fishing activity, increased tourism, future port development, seismic testing, and discharge of urban and industrial wastes threaten the belugas. Natural threats include strandings, predation by killer whales, and disease. And the Center for Biological Diversity filed a suit in federal district court in Phoenix against the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission over their failure to protect the threatened Little Colorado River spine dace. That's a small fish. The lawsuit says the lawsuit asks FERC to enter into formal consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service under the Endangered Species Act. The Colorado River spine dace needs increased flows in East Clear Creek to recover. The Blue Ridge Dam and Reservoir needs to increase flows to protect the spine dace and its habitat, said Peter Galvin, conservation biologist for the center. FERC must stop allowing East Clear Creek to be sucked dry by the Phelps Dodge Corporation. Phelps Dodge Base in Phoenix is the number two copper producer, accounting for a third of United States copper. The firm also produces gold, silver, and other minerals. The Little Colorado River spine dace was listed as endangered in 1987. And that's about all the time we have for news right now. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F at C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344 in Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send all those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so Uncle Dennis can get them on the air in a timely manner. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And you'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. We're also live streaming at microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off his CD, Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. We'll be back next week. Now we're going to listen to some music. This is by Peg Millett off her Clear Horizons CD, and this one's called Forever Wild.
There's a magic in the air that I feel when I am there. It plays straight for my heart, and it lays it all bare. It's in the cry of an eagle, and the deer so meek and mild. It's in the rise of a mountain, let it stay forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild, let it stay forever wild. It's in all that is not tame, and some that can't be named. It's in the fog down in the valley, it's in the scent of summer rain, it's in the scream of a lion when she's sounding like a child. It's in the song of a river, let it stay forever wild, forever wild, forever wild, let it stay forever wild. Now the earth, she holds the key to all that shall be free. It's in the peace down in the desert and the wisdom of the trees. It's in the grace of a swan's wing and the grizzly when she's riled. It's in all the love I bear it, let it stay forever wild. Forever wild, forever wild, let it stay forever wild. Now there are those of our own kind, they're running fast and going blind, and the only thing they worship is their god, the dollar sign. Well, we must fight them with our spirit, with our might and with our guile. We must show them that the answer is to stay forever wild, forever wild.